multi-touch surface and kind of their experience with it. These guys are hardcore designer-developer kind of guys. Well, not designer, no. But you understand UX, and they understand what that touch and that natural user experience is, and they have been there and had those hard knocks in the past. And so they're going to talk about their experiences with that. So no further ado, Black Marble.
So good afternoon, everyone. It's not like you haven't seen enough of me today already. So due to time, we'll try and keep a sort of I'll try and keep this nice and rapid while Robert sets up the presentation. So the talk concept is we've gone through a journey in UX, and it's been quite an interesting journey. We've done multi-touch and touch applications for years, but one of the definitive changing points in our entire business is once we adopted Surface. And once we started to adopt Surface, we realized that, if I'm going to be quite honest, everything we'd done in the past was wrong. Not wrong bad, but wrong we hadn't thought about things in the right way. So the first section I'm actually going to do is actually to talk to you about UX concepts. Now, can I just do a quick poll of hands? Who of you are designers? Okay. So this is going to be a developer talking to designers about UX design. We'll see how that goes. But I'm going to talk to you about conceptually what's changed our business and acceptance. And we're going to be showing off a whole pile of work we'll be doing around Metro and Touch and Multi-Touch just after the summer. And the reactions, I'll tell you now, we're getting are absolutely stunning. So I'm hoping if you go through these, if we're about ready. Close?
Wait for it to...
I'll do a song and dance routine for you. The change that we've actually had taken up these approaches has really been marked. Our initial... touch application was many years ago. We built an exhibition for Eon Productions, who make the James Bond films. It was for the last Pierce Brosnan film and then the first Daniel Craig film, and it toured the UK and America for a couple of years, and we saw it saw millions of users and had, I think, one failure in a couple of million users. So we've got a good track record of actually delivering these things. But normally we've partnered with design agencies to actually do the delivery. If you're a mixed design and dev house, this will probably have more impact. But if you are a dev house looking for designers, you'll know a whole pile of things to insist on. And if you're a design house, you'll know how to talk to developers, hopefully at the end. So I'm going to be talking to you in... Are we running technical issues? I also want to talk to you, have any of you actually done any Surface development? Okay. Windows bridge is exposed to it. The one right at the top. There should be one right at the top.
Okay. Windows Play?
Just so
one?
Extend.
I did do extend, but...
Technology, there we go.
It's not extended.
You need to sort what you want, don't you?
Yep.
Ah, technology, marvellous. There we go. Anyway, right, you don't care about that. I'm off topic because actually a slide crutch, that's not a good state, is it? All the way around. And then duplicate from there. Okay. What we're going to be talking about is the concepts behind design, then software. Oh, we are ready. Good. Starting again. I'll run it how it is. I'll actually do it. Excuse me just a second. Run the same. Let's just get on with this. I'm guessing you know that piece. You know us. We'll skip. And... Okay. So initially I'm going to be talking to you about a concept called NUI. I'll do the same thing. How many of you come across NUI? Few of you? Mixed views? Okay. So I'm going to deliver this now. I have to say, until again we came across the Surface team and people like Lewis and August, we were moderately skeptical, and the end results has changed our business, so we can see how that goes. Then we'll actually have a quick run through on the software and then talk about actually the business of delivery if we have time. We're also going to try and do a demonstration as well. We have a slight technical issue that the Surface resolution is greater than the laptops we brought, so seeing a quarter of a screen for Surface 2 might not help you. So let's start with the start. So for those of you here this morning, we talked about Metro as a concept for a design language, which is used on Phone 7, and in fact it's used on Surface as well. Metro is the concept that as you go around sort of an urban or a metro landscape, signage is very easy to follow. You can find things, you can see things, because it has to appeal to people and it has to be usable. As a very strange comment, I'm actually a huge fan of the work of the people who actually designed in the 1950s the British motorway signage. That's probably a very strange thing to say. If you are interested, I would strongly urge you. I think the BBC has a program on it. There's a whole program about the design of motorway signage. And you think, what's that got to do with anything? These people had to design signage which, for cars travelling at speeds, that really weren't usual. Current, signage at the time was quite small and unusable. And they came up with the concept of big signs with blue and white, which we all take for granted nowadays. Big, bold type that's easily readable at a distance. And that was the start of the Metro signage. In fact, the same team then actually did airport signage as a follow-on. So the standard yellow signage you see, which is actually the one in the middle, which you'll see in every airport in the world, was done by the same team, is my understanding. But it means in any airport, in any part of the world, you can find your way around. It's simple, it's clear, it's easy to understand. And what I would say is that developers, and I'm a developer, so I'm allowed to criticize developers. If you're a developer, please take it on the chin. Developers will tend to add lots of dancing monkeys on the screen or add a lot of cleverness where cleverness isn't needed. In general, users actually need to find information. Users actually want to use a system. And just because you can make a disc spin continually in the corner that makes everybody feel a bit queasy, it doesn't really help anyone. It's a great piece of technology, but think about your users first. So I'm not a designer, so I'm going to talk a few minutes on design principles, which is a bit sad for everyone. The concepts behind Metro are fairly straightforward. Just make it live, make it usable, and be honest with yourself about what the users are actually trying to achieve. So the first one is the principle of the clean, the light, and the open, the fast. Fundamentally, it means if it shouldn't be there, it doesn't need to be there, don't put it there. Only have elements displayable on the screen to the user that the user needs right now, and don't do anything else. Very, very aggressively attack your designs to remove anything. Challenge everything and remove it unless it's really needed. And make sure that you use the full screen. We'll come to authentically digital in a second. The second one is use people who understand typography. I'm not that person. But I know our UX people spend huge amounts of time getting the typography just right. And I can't, it's very hard for a developer because I don't have the eye for this. But if you actually are very careful and get some people who understand typography to help you out, you'll start with one thing and they change the typography and the layout very slightly, and the impact of a user experience is really quite impressive. And it takes little or no time, technically, from a developer point of view. It takes quite a bit of time for the user experience people to sort out. But typography is something that's missed in a lot of developer products. Actually make a system responsive and fast. For those of you who sat through my Mango talk earlier, one of the key things there is The whole thing has to be responsive. It has to be fast. Everything about the design of the frameworks and everything that underpins Windows Phone 7 is make it fast. Make the user feel like they're in complete control. It makes a huge difference. Again, deliver content to people, not decoration. That's quite a straightforward one. And the last one is, make something authentically digital. By the way, I didn't come up with these phrases. I'd have probably put slightly blunter terms. But basically, if it's a phone, don't try and display something at 1080p. There's no point. Don't design something this big and squeeze it onto a phone. It's a phone, so develop an application design that's going to fit well for a phone. If it's a Surface, fit it for a Surface. But a lot of people say, we'll build one and then we'll scale it a bit. Don't do that. It's cheap enough and quick enough now to actually build multiple user experiences on top of the same code. Build one for each flavor. Okay. But that's a phone. We're not really talking about a phone. We're meant to be talking about Surface. But Phone 7 is a really good example of actually how clear is that. If you look at that, every single one of those screens, you can tell what's going on and what's going to happen if you touch any single element. And that's probably a key description of what Metro is. The Metro guidelines available from Microsoft, well worth a read. Okay. So, I want to talk to you about natural user interface. And oddly enough, I'm going to talk to you about natural user interface after I've described it. There's a reason for that, because there's a story I want to tell you about what actually, there was a final piece of the puzzle for us that said natural user interface is a winner and will be a winner for a very long time to come. So conceptually, we've got two predecessors. We have the command line interface. Can I ask just out of curiosity, how many of you have spent more than 5 years of your life with only a command line interface? Right. And following on from that, the radical realization that you can actually use a mouse and a pointer, and we get the joys that is GUI. And GUI is conceptually the step after. Whether it actually is the step after, if it's a step and a half after, a half a step on, that's open for complete debate. But GUI is generally regarded as the next step on. So conceptually, we have CLI, GUI, and NUI. And there's some fairly simple definitions which says what the difference. If you're set at a CLI prompt, to actually take any action, you have to recall the action yourself. If you don't know what the command is, you can't do anything. That's the be-all and end-all of a CLI. In a GUI, you can recognize what's going on. You can say, okay, there's a menu item that says save. I know what to do now. In a NUI, the concept is it should be intuitive. As you touch an item, it should do what you expect. Does that kind of make sense? Yeah? Okay. Now, actually, due to time, I'm going to go through as fast as I can. But what that means is, on the CLI, you're directed. It's the user's directing what's going to be happening. There is no interaction from the system, apart from a little green prompt going beep, 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 beep. On a GUI, the user can explore around and find things. And then when you come to the NUI, it should be contextual. If I'm looking at a picture and I touch it and I do that, it should do the right thing. Okay? And the separation is, if you think about the learning experience, for those of you who use command line, if those of you who have spent years of your life in Orc and Grep and all those wonderful tools, you realize that if you could just point and just say, I want those bits from there, and it does it, that'd be kind of cool. So then when we're talking about CLI, we then get the concept of how many things can you do and when can you do them. So in a command line, there's a high number of things you can do at any one point in time. So actually, CLI has an interesting concept, though. At any CLI prompt, you could do anything instantaneously if you knew what that command was. In a GUI, you have the concept that you can only do the things that are presented in front of you, and you have to find them. And then in a NUI, there's fewer things you can do, but they're actually presented to you as you need them. Okay? Very quickly at the end, what we then get is, what it means is that people are very disconnected from a CLI. They have a kind of a view of GUI, but their view of GUI is it just does what they want. And therefore, the response of the people tends to be GUI tends to win. Okay. So multi-touch design has five principles. The one which, there's actually about two of these which I care about. Performance aesthetics is the application should perform. You know, it should do what you want when you think it should happen. Direct manipulation is fairly obvious. The three at the bottom are less obvious. I'll concentrate on those for a second. The principle of scaffolding is, you'll know it very familiar playing a game. The first time you play a game of any time, shoot 'em up or whatever it's going to be, the first level allows you one gun and one way of walking up and down. The next time you go in level two, you may be given a second gun and it shows you how to jump up and down a bit or climb through a hole. And the principle of scaffolding is building the user experience up so they actually learn with the application. That's the principle of scaffolding. Basically, build a scaffold for them to learn on and actually grow with the experience of your application. Contextual environment actually is fairly obvious, but the principle of the super real is not. So, the principle of the super real is actually very much like the Blue Angels example you saw just a few minutes ago. When the user actually, the end user said, we want the experience to be exactly like real life. And the problem you get is, well, if you want to experience real life, why don't you go to an air show? You know? What we're actually doing is we're providing an experience which is similar to. So the principle of the superreal says, don't take things too literally and try and imagine things around the outside to give a user experience that's actually going to work for the users in delivering this kind of experience. Okay? Don't try and do a pure replica of what's actually happening. Because if you're doing it, imagine a film like Star Wars. It must be realistic. The whole film would be silent for most of the battle scenes. All the spaceships flying around, if they could actually fly around like that, of course, in complete silence, because you can't hear anything in space. So I think there's a piece that people miss, which is they try and be too real, and rather than giving a really great experience. So where does this actually leave us with GUI? So one of my many rambling stories will now ensue. So many years ago, my business partner, Richard Fennell, and those of you who've seen TFS will have met Richard, a very dear friend of mine, don't tell him. Luckily for me, he trusts me implicitly, and I looked and said, I see Surface as the future. You know, we're a medium, you know, small to medium-sized company, and I said, I want to spend about 15,000 euros buying a Surface. Why? I think it's a really good idea. And Richard is actually quite a Luddite. You know, it's a pen and paper has done me since man and boy. And in a piss of fake, he said, yeah, fine, well, do whatever you want to do. Anyway, at some point in time later, our Surface arrived, dutifully unboxed. And for those of you who I won't threaten Wilbur's Surface, but it's a four-man lift. The Surface 1 is a bit of a beast. And this thing arrived, and we very gingerly carried it out, and we plugged it together. And Richard was stood next to me and said, what have you done? Why have you wasted all my money? And I thought, yes. And at that moment, my youngest daughter and his eldest boy came in, both aged 7 at the time, went, ooh, ran over to the Surface, and just started using it. And both of us actually watched them. They ran application after application. They were drawing. They were playing games. They were manipulating pictures, creating videos. And after about 10 minutes, Richard said, quite simply, yeah, that was probably some of the best money we ever spent. I'm not talking about the financials of Surface, but the concept was 2 7-year-olds walked up to a Surface and just used it. Based on all the principles that I sort of whittled on about for the last few minutes, they were able to, because the design was done so well, it didn't occur to them that if you touched a picture, it would not move. It didn't occur to them that if you did that, it wouldn't size out. And if you did that, the picture wouldn't rip in half. It just didn't occur to them. They did what came naturally to them through the skills that they'd learnt up coming up to about the age of 7. You could actually say that a good user experience is aimed at a 7-year-old. And to be honest, that's probably not a bad idea, hasten to add. So the principles of NUI is that anybody can walk up without training, without learning, without anything else, and actually use it effectively like that. But to do that takes some effort, which is the piece I'm hopefully going to go through and talk to you about. Just as a quick follow-on, there is a general feeling that after NUI there is, whatever that's going to be. And it's going to be even more fluid, extensive, and anticipatory, and all sorts of clever things. And actually, I think Connect actually starts to deliver some of that experience. Because think about Connect, you're not even touching anything now. You're just waving, hopefully, in the air, and things change. That's just for reference. Let's do Windows 7 AutoCHECK. I wanted to talk to you about something else. So, touch is fundamentally, you all know it, it's an input method. The problem comes is when you actually come to design for touch. Most people think touch is exactly the same as a mouse press. And I have to say, for many years, that's how we worked. Certainly the work we did on Bond, James Bond, really the touch was just a mouse press. There was no conceptual difference. You could have given them a mouse, you could have given them a touch screen. It didn't really make any difference at all. Now, as it turns out, you could only get single-point touch screens, and they were a bit ropey at the best of times, so that probably wasn't such a bad thing. But what we've actually found over time is you actually need to think a lot more about how people move their fingers and twists and turns, and I'll cover that in just a second. So you should all be familiar pretty much with those sort of concepts, grasping. Most phones do this sort of thing. Most TVs will. Surface does. They're all the same. But actually what I'd say is quite often people don't think. So what we tend to find is people building a Surface application or a touch application, it's touch. Why is it touch? Because it's running on a touch screen. Do you actually take account of people doing panty actions? Oh, no. Well, what happens when they flick? Nothing. What happens when they pinch and stretch? Nothing. So if you're actually building a true touch application, you should actually consider, as a very minimum, all of these. If you're not actually dealing with all of these, you have a mouse-based application. Okay? I'd have to say we were actually guilty of that. Multi-touch is here. Multi-touch hardware is fairly cheap. Some of you saw the Candy application, which we showed off this morning. The actual multi-touch hardware there was maybe 100, 120 euros a screen. Very cheap, very cost-effective. I think most of our laptops, not this one, actually are all touch. It's strange that all laptops aren't touch now, but I'm sure they will be soon. I'm trying to be polite on it because it's now being filmed. I had some comments I wanted to make right now. The problem is, I keep trying to say, people don't do this very well. Again, it's coming back to people doing touch. So one of our experiences in actually dealing with Surface, and again, I think software development is a learning experience. When we first got doing Surface, we built an application, rather proud of. We actually built an application. We said, we're all gamers at Black Marble. So we said, we want a game, an interactive game, board game, brilliant. Because there's cameras in, let's roll real dice. So we'll go through the imagery. It was a game that you could actually take your turns. You roll real dice. We capture the dice with the camera. Image capture the number of dots. Put a thing around to say, you rolled a 3, you rolled a 4, and you take your turn. Fantastic. And the game worked remarkably well. And very proudly, we shipped it to the service team. And they said, that's very nice for a touch application. And we said, no, it's a surface application because we use the camera. And they were incredibly pleasant and polite to us in hindsight, considering how arrogant I suspect we were at the time. And they kept coming back and saying, well, what happens when you touch there? Well, nothing. Well, you put your finger down, well, what happens? Well, that's where you start drawing the point when you do that. So what happens when you touch that point? And in the end, what they said is, look, every action on a properly built multi-touch or surface application should do something. When you touch the screen, there should be a glow to tell the user that the system knows you've touched it. Okay, that makes sense. And while you're dragging, how are you actually telling the users you're dragging down the line to draw the line on the game? Well, we're sort of colouring it in a bit, maybe. Well, why don't you sort of put a sparkle to show how far down the line you are? And very slowly we went through this process of again and again going back. And at the end, and it probably only took a couple of weeks, the difference in the application from an application which actually was a touch application, if I'm going to be quite honest, to an application which hit all of the principles that I've already talked to you about, was a remarkably different application. And those things are actually quite easy to overlook because they're just lots of little things. When there's a touch, what do? When you pinch, what does it do? You've got to react to all of the user all of the time, not when you think it's appropriate. Okay, I'll stop ranting. Just as an aside, for those of you who don't know, if you build Silverlight 4 applications inside a browser, you can actually use touch and multi-touch. Those APIs are all completely open to you, assuming that there is a multi-touch device on the other end, of course. So, let's talk about actually Microsoft Surface. Microsoft Surface was actually announced in PDC 2008, which doesn't seem that long ago. And that's the device, if you can't see the one over there. A very reasonable $15,000, or I think in Europe it was about 15,000 euro, which is a nice conversion rate in anybody's money, and a very lean 198 pounds. I say that due to my current size, and I'm sure hopefully in about 6 months' time I'd say that's very heavy. So conceptually, it's a rather interesting device, made by some people in some sheds at the backs of at the back of Microsoft HQ. Fairly low availability. They were in short supply most of the time, and let's be fair, practicality for actually delivering around places. When we take ours around, it's a 3 to 4 man lift. Well, if I'm involved, a 4 man lift, probably normal human beings about 2. And a big van and a lot of time and effort. It's not a portable device, but what it does is pretty great. Under the hood, it's actually got a projector and a whole series of cameras. We'd obviously have broken our service agreement if we'd taken ours apart, so obviously I don't know what's inside of ours, but it's actually got a huge, if I was to imagine, it's got a huge amount of cabling, lots of USB hubs, lots of custom hardware, and the fact it's the first time I think I've ever theoretically seen a series of IT people actually genuinely scared, which was quite sweet, allegedly. What makes it actually great, though, is when you go and have a look, this story is going to sound absolutely crazy. It's got a 1-inch thick, or 1.5-inch thick Perspex block on the top. This thing is, you pick it up by the top and it isn't going anywhere. And when we got it, it was gently lifted by a whole pile of people sort of shredding their fingers rather than damage this precious little object. And then a set of our guys went away for some time with the Surface team and came back and they said, what was the first thing you learned? And they climbed on top of the Surface and did a dance. And they said, it's pretty solid. And after I picked myself up, having somebody sort of smashed up my 15,000 euro Surface, and it being perfectly okay, then the world changed. And it really, I mean, those things, they're going to survive any nuclear war in the future. Quite incredible. But again, not that practical for actually, if you're doing any sort of touring shows. For installations, they're actually quite fantastic. Which I think. So, what makes Surface different from regular multi-touch? So we have touch, we have multi-touch. Surface conceptually is a massive multi-touch. That means it can actually deal with up to 50 independent fingers at once. In different orientations with people sat in different positions. And it can also recognize objects, and it can also recognize things put on top of it. And that makes it quite unique in what it actually does. So for those who came, were in the morning session, we said, we actually built some touch applications to actually demonstrate to people what the difference between massive multi-touch and touch was. Because I didn't want people saying, we want this great touch application on multi-touch application on Surface, and it wasn't going to be a touch multi-touch application, it was going to be touch. And you can say, well, why should you spend 15,000 euro when you can spend 150 euro for the same display device and get the same experience? It was wrong. I will show you some examples of some. I don't think we brought the videos of some of the bits we've done. But the recognizing objects is good, but still slightly limited. I think I'll just skip that one. There you go. What actually makes the massive multi-touch, though, is when you actually put a finger on a surface, as a developer, you not only get that as a touch point, you also get the orientation of the finger as well. So if you have five people, or realistically four or five people sat around a surface, as each user touches, you actually know where that person is sat, give or take. And that means you're able to actually orientate any display items for that user towards them. So a good example is we built, with a design partner, we built a search tool. It was actually for Manchester City Tourist Board. If you actually search for it on YouTube, I think some videos. And as part of that, we built a map of Manchester, and you can search for things. But the search was actually done with objects, which I'll cover in a second. But when items actually came up to display, a card would display, and it actually think, that's upside down. That didn't really help me very much. So we've actually built a new version for Surface 2, where whenever you touch any, as you touch for search, when you say, oh, that's the thing I'm interested in, any information is just quickly orientated for you. It's a few lines of code. The difference to the user experience is phenomenal. And that's the thing that makes it massive multi-touch. You know where these people are. You know how they're working. And I think the big thing on Surface is when you actually start to do it, there's not a huge learning thing, but you've got to start thinking. Get some good designers in. But Surface, as you probably guessed, also is a camera. Now, Surface itself, Surface 1, has no pressure at all. It's a solid perspex. There's nothing in there. What there is a set of cameras, and the code inside Surface actually recognizes the shape of fingers. Because the cameras are infrared, I hasten those aren't my fingers. I think mine are a lot fatter than that. As you put your finger down, if you actually look, I'll have to, sorry about this. If you actually look on the fingers, they actually display slightly different. And in fact, most of the Surface is around the orientation of what it can actually see in those shapes. Despite what you might think, when you push your fat little finger onto a surface, it extends slightly, and that shape is quite recognizable. Obviously, none of you, you're all perfect Aiden to it. It should be. The next thing is that they also said, well, okay, we can recognize fingers, which is quite good. We want to recognize objects. And so you've got two concepts, byte tags and identity tags. In real terms, most of the work we've done is with byte tags. There's enough unique values. Identity tags are quite interesting. So for the Manchester City Tourist Board, what we actually did is there was a concept of how are we going to actually search for things. You could type for things, you could give menus. Is that what you want with a NUI? And we came up with the concept that if you actually milled out a series of Perspect blocks, about so big, round, and then actually wrote on the top, say, hotels, restaurants, you see where this is going? Nightlife, cinema, that sort of thing. And then on the bottom, you actually put a bike tag. Now, actually in the prototypes, we actually made the bike tags, we painted them with infrared paint, because infrared paint is transparent, and on the blocks, then you can't actually see anything. There's no electronics in there. It's just a block of Perspex with no visible markings. But when you actually put them on the surface, we then put a search radius onto the map. And as you turn them, because we get the orientation exactly like the fingers, we could increase and decrease the search radius. And then inside that search radius, things that you're interested in pop up. You can then take a different block and put it on, and then actually have two interactive search radius at the same time. And then as you touch the hotel or the restaurant that you're interested in, that can then be brought to you, and then we can plot routes and lots of great stuff with maps. And what's interesting is people look at this and want to spend most of the time, well, how does this work? Are there chips inside? And the point is, I think a part of NUI is actually about just a little pinch of magic. If they can't figure out how you've done it, you've probably done a good job. If they can, well, that's okay too. But if they're not thinking about the technology, they're just grabbing things and using them, then that's kind of how surface is really meant to be working. So, I can't remember when the actual announcement came, but Surface 2 was announced earlier this year, and it's actually been announced that it's now going to be called the Samsung SUR40, which is a nice sort of Surface 2 sort of moniker. I'll probably get told off if I don't... Oh, Samsung SUR40 for Microsoft Surface. I will get told off if I don't say that. And the reason is, Microsoft figured out they probably shouldn't be making TVs. They probably should get somebody who knows a lot about making TVs, and Samsung pretty much knows everything there is to know about making TVs. Pretty much a good choice. Anytime, there we go. So we've got Surface 1... And Surface 2 is pretty much that. In real terms, what you actually have there is a 40-inch LCD screen with a high-end PC inside, which I'll go through in a second. But one of the big differences is that it actually has a concept called Pixel Sense, which I'll cover in a second, which means the whole surface is, in fact, a camera as well as a display. And, by the way, it's pretty awesome. There you go. That's actually one that in the real world. The only thing that I've contended about is that you might not be able to see it on the screen. Actually, it actually has the obviously for good reason has the Samsung logo. And one of the things I asked was, why don't you have the Samsung logo on both sides? Because it's meant to be a symmetric screen. But you'll see why in just a second. So. The difference is this surface can be actually wall-mounted. I really wanted to see somebody try and mount the old one, just for humour, but nobody has done. And it actually can drive a whole pile of other displays because it's got HDMI. It's actually probably quite hard to see, but the Microsoft team has spent a lot of time making sure that there's a whole pile of accessible USB ports and tracking all the way around the outside. So if you do want to bolt extra devices like card readers or RFID tag readers or anything like that, you can quite easily attach them to the side, effectively internally cable inside the surface, and then actually shut down all the ports so nobody can just stick USB keys in and that sort of thing. It really has been incredibly well designed, and it's ruggedized for actually delivery. I believe it's actually got the largest piece of Gorilla Glass on the market bonded to it. So I have seen some trials where they were dropping bowling balls on the surface to make sure it can cope. I'm not sure why you'd do that, but anyway, they seem to be rather happy that you can drop a bowling ball on it from a certain height. But hey, what do I know? So the Pixel Sense is fairly clever as well. Actually, it's stunningly clever. In real terms, what you actually have is a near per pixel camera actually under the surface as you're actually running. And then obviously once now they've got the camera technology without a projector and cameras underneath, the whole thing becomes a lot thinner and it looks pretty cool. I normally wouldn't put a marketing slide on, but I just found this one funny. They describe it as 4 inches thin. It's I just for some reason I like the thing. What I would say is it is actually moderately thick. It's hard to actually tell because they've actually got a nice design where it actually covers it at the edges, so it doesn't actually look thick until you actually look properly at the side, but that's part of the illusion that the team actually goes for. Quick piece about the specs. You both have Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. The big difference, if you actually look, we're actually now at full 1080p, whereas before it was just 1024/768 and quite a lot larger. It's faster. The key one, though, is they've really invested heavily in making sure that the kit's actually pretty much as fast as you can get it with low power. And it really does, it shows. Okay, on the actual application itself, it runs Windows 7. It's all 64-bit. All Surface development is pretty much WPF4. So if you're actually doing WPF development, you're pretty much most of the way on the way to doing Surface Dev. I'll quickly sprint through some control types you can use on top. And then Microsoft supplies this thing called the Surface Shell, which is a newer version of the one shown over there. To give an example on delivery, one of the reasons we're so interested in Silverlight and Phone 7 and Surface is we can actually use exactly the same skills on every single one of these platforms. So this morning I actually briefly mentioned an application we'd written called O7 with a friend of ours called Pete Cowley, and we, you know, to put onto Marketplace. And we thought, well, actually, for Surface 2, should we do a port? The port from Phone 7 to Surface 2 from a phone application to a fully working Surface application took one day. One man day of effort. And the whole we then had an application running on Surface and a WPF application running on Surface, and in fact also it ran Windows 7 as well at that point. Now, I've got a caveat. Well, then there was an extra block of work then on top to actually add what I'd call the Surface features. You know, as we touch things, it lights up. And the graphics, obviously, on a Phone 7 don't quite meet the requirements that you'd actually want to deliver on a Surface application due to resolution and change. So there was a block of work after that, changing the user experience so it was a Surface level. But fundamentally, all of the AI, the game logic, the start of the game, all of that all fully worked within a day and was completely shareable. And we have a shared code base between Surface and Phone 7. So this is why the Microsoft stack actually starts to start really win out. If you're building it's almost if you pick any two out of the three or four platforms Microsoft are delivering against, once you build two, in general, number one costs you a unit of time, number two costs you a fraction of a unit, and number three and four tend to sort of drop out of the just out of the process, which is really quite nice. Also on Surface 2, we actually have quite a large amount of administration tools, because people are saying it's okay because they tend to be standalone units, but IT managers are saying, well, how do we manage these? So there's a complete PowerShell interface, configuration tools, all the kind of stuff that makes IT managers all very happy. So you have problems deploying because IT managers say, you can't have that, I can't manage it. There's a complete set of administration tools baked in, so you can just poke your tongue at them or whatever you do to IT managers. Actually, I won't cover that. The APIs. Fairly straightforward. The Surface applications sit on top of WPF, the core APIs and the shell UI APIs, which I'll cover very briefly. I'm just conscious of time. So you have a set of core APIs which aren't tied to the rest. Basically, if you want to get raw images like we did to actually do the dice capture or touch events, they're easy to access, and you can get imagery like that if you wish. The WPF applications, you have a whole pile of standard controls which are already set up to do all of the responses you need as part of NUI. So if you actually use the WPF APIs, there's a lot less work actually to do as well. If you want to roll your own, it'll take you longer. The framework provides all of the functionalities you'd expect, drag and drop, etc. Fairly easy APIs, even I can write that. If you want to find out. Now, We did actually contend whether you should actually put a service on as like a pivot. You could actually do that, but it doesn't really seem to be a lot of points after we tried it. But anyway, that'd be quite nice. Common controls, windows, buttons, ink, sliders, all fairly straightforward. And then you basically just replace the word and that's use the surface derivatives to make it a bit easier. Scatter view tends to be one that people use a lot for multi-user applications. If you actually look at the surface applications, you'll see these. And it's the old, with a scatter view and a list view, you tend to be able to do a large amount of stuff with styling. So it's the, if you've got a stack of items and you want to do that and it'll sort of shuffle around, all that sort of stuff, it's quite sweet. An element menu. And then one of the things that actually, if you remember when I was talking about earlier on about Phone 7, what you actually now have is a really nice emulator tool. So we have monitor tilt, so you can actually see what the tilt is. And then we can actually simulate. Actually, I'll see if I can do it the next. There we go, that'll be easier on too. So we can simulate byte tags, press, and all of those sort of things, and lift, so drop, lift, and we can actually show the input. So you can actually fully test any Surface 2 application generally without seeing a Surface 2. Exactly the same as Phone 7. Once you get to the point of, I think it's ready, drop it to a real Surface or drop it to a real phone for final testing. Whereas before, it was if you didn't have a Surface, you couldn't develop. Now you can actually get most of the way there and try most of the concepts without actually having to purchase a unit. How are we doing for time? What? Wrap up, okay. Sorry. The SDK will be available in the summer. Samsung will be selling quite aggressively. It's thinner, cheaper, and faster than it was before. The actual price hasn't been set, but it should be a sensible fraction of the old price. My guess is it's going to end up being the kind of price that sort of a plasma screen were when they first came out. So it's going to be that sort of cost where corporate boardrooms and that sort of thing, it's quite acceptable to have a Surface. Okay, there we go. So I hope you found that useful. Hopefully it wasn't too rambly. It was a strange one where I wanted to really get across our experience as much as Surface itself is a great platform, but I wanted to get across our experiences and the things we've learnt. But what I'd say is our experience out through now using Nui and Metro together has radically changed all of our user experiences for everything we do, and our customers are so happy with everything we do now. I can't explain how happy this is making people. As for that, I think I'm going to wrap up and hand over to Wilbur, I guess. Josh, as I make you run. Come on. Have we got time for questions or... Two questions. Are there any questions? No? Don't mean we're going to take a break? No questions? Question?
What sectors are you seeing the most?
Okay, I'll repeat the question because you don't have a microphone. What industry sectors, this is for Surface 1 or for touch and multi-touch?
Surface.
So the question is, what industry sectors are you actually seeing interest in Surface? Generally, it's hospitality, tourism, and sort of where you're going to see large numbers of people in early. But the problem is, I'll be blunt, the problem is always down to the cost. If you talk to a group and say, that's great, how many sites have you got? We've got 100 sites. How much is it? €15,000. And so, hello, where have you gone? And that's the problem. People love the technology and lots of other organisations. The number of times where we've been at a show and actually military people have come up and say, basically, can we move our boats around, certainly. And even they say the cost is, ooh. So I'm expecting that now the cost should drop quite a lot. The industries that are going to be picking up will actually start to broaden quite dramatically. I think sort of still entertainment, retail, media, and that sort of tourism will sort of certainly going to be a very key part. But then you'll start seeing it in boardrooms and a few other places as well. One more, if there's time. At the back, if somebody can get a microphone to the gentleman.
Similar to the last question.
There'll be a microphone with you in a second, sir. There's a lovely lady sort of running to you at the speed of fast. I'm sure you get a T-shirt as well.
Sorry, this is similar to the last question, in that your answer there was on hospitality. All those kind of applications you could do with a touch screen. So I can't see, I still can't see the difference between the Surface and the touch screen, or what applications you can develop that you couldn't put on a touch screen.
Okay, so where Surface tends to be different is when you're going to get groups of people together.
Yeah, but give me an example of where you want 50 people, apart from playing a game or something like that.
I think 50 fingers is 50 fingers is 5 people.
Yeah.
So you actually get 4 people sat around. In hospitality, around a table, or in a waiting area, you tend to find groups of people clustered together, and that's when massive multi-touch tends to win out very heavily.
But doing what? Like all ordering off a menu at the same time or something like that, is it?
Sorry?
Would it be all people ordering in a restaurant at the same time from the same table?
Well, you actually tend to see... So our experience is, once people start to touch, everybody starts to touch at the same time. And again, you've also got the problem of a standard touch screen is a point touch, not an orientation touch. If you're sat at that side, I'm sat at this side, whichever way the touch screen is orientated is where all the menus and the information will flow. The advantage of something like Surface is you can do the orientation around the user. And this is...
Okay, just one other thing. Like, the only sort of example I've seen is probably in a restaurant, where they actually use one of these tables. I think it's on a Microsoft site or something like that. I'm just wondering if somebody dropped a pint of beer or something like that over it. What happens? Could it leak down the side or anything like that?
So going back to the HUD, the one in Black Marble is, again, when it first came, it was sort of very gingerly touched and sort of clean. As has had everything poured on it. Oh, it is. And then every now and again, you hose the top down and wipe it down. Never had a problem at all. And I believe Surface 2 is the same. In hospitality, I don't see it as a problem. They are built as very ruggedized devices. And actually, if you look at proper ruggedized touchscreens, ruggedized touchscreens are actually very expensive. One last point I didn't make, then I'll run away, is the surfaces run cool. If you touch the surface, it doesn't get hot. And that, I believe that's exactly the same with Surface 2. So if you actually have an LCD screen, very slow, quite quickly they get quite warm, and people can, they go, oh, that's a bit hot, or burn themselves, whichever. That doesn't happen with Surface and Surface 2. They're designed for long, prolonged use and lots of users. So I would say if you're in that environment, I certainly would look at Surface 2. And if you've got any questions, do find me afterwards, and I'll hand over to Josh.